This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 162. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Well, welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Berners. Garras, how's it going?
All good here, mate. All good, thank you.
Not bad, thanks, Chief. Blue skies above me. It's getting better.
The sun always shines on the righteous, as they say, Berners.
Well, there you go.
So this week I wanted to have a little bit of a look at some Indian cricket issues, because it's probably the place where more cricket's played anywhere in the world, and it'd be nice to talk about some of the things that go on in Indian cricket that maybe are a bit more specific to Indian cricket, but also have some universal themes as well. And one of the things that I was looking at this week was an article about cricket that's played in Chennai, and specifically how club cricket has kind of died away in that part of the world. And I think that's a common theme across a lot of Indian cricket, in that you play when you're younger, and then you move into your chosen profession, and there's not really any recreational cricket that goes on. I'm not sure if that helps the game in India or not. That is certainly a different system from what happens in England, isn't it, Gareth?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, having spent a lot of time over there, I do think it's a little bit regionalised as well. And Chennai is obviously, according to the article and from our own experiences as well, is suffering as a result. I think the club system in Mumbai is certainly more vibrant. And a lot of it is built around the universities, the colleges, but also a lot of the gymkhanas and sports clubs around Mumbai. So the tradition of those establishments keep club cricket going. But it's definitely a challenge within Chennai. As to whether it affects significantly, I think only time will tell on that one. Because one of the things about having a smaller pool of players is it generally concentrates the better ones. If you're looking purely down the talent ID route, and smaller numbers, as much as you look for big bases, smaller numbers can mean that the quality on offer, as we see when countries around the world try and produce Premier Leagues to try and get the best playing against the best, that tends to happen a little bit more often with the smaller numbers. So time will tell whether that works in India, but certainly as from my experience, it's very much regionalised in terms of the strength and depth of club cricket around India.
Berners, you've been in India. I know that you've been working with the more professional level guys, but did you get to see much of the lower level cricket in India when you were out there?
Yeah, I did actually. It's hard to miss. There are academies on every street corner where I were in Calcutta. But quite an interesting topic actually, because I actually said, you know, it's often a story for or conversation when you're over there, is, you know, how, when you look around the place, how can India not be, you know, almost immortal in world cricket with the way that the people play there? But a guy said to me that one consideration in India is that families and young people these days put a very high regard on education. So a lot of the kids will go to school for, you know, the standard day. They'll also then go to kind of additional learning and classes in, say, music or English language, and be studying for the best part of 10, 12 hours a day. So, you know, for them to have the ability to fit in a cricket academy or a cricket club around that as well is pretty tricky. They could play, but whether they take it seriously and have that, you know, dying ambition to actually go on and make it probably remains to be seen these days. I think with what they see around them, you know, America and the Western world, they place such a high value on being educated that maybe that's kind of now overtaken the whole prestige of being an Indian cricketer now. No doubt there are kids who want to be cricketers, and they set their whole dreams and lives on it. But I think essentially that people are a little bit more realistic to what, you know, the challenges of what life's going to bring them. So they look for that education part first.
I agree, and also the world's got bigger, isn't it? Because as India has grown as an economic state as well, it brings opportunity to travel. It brings links in from the likes of America, from Britain, and from other aspects of parts of the world. So, life does change over there, and has changed probably since the 1980s. It's changed significantly, and India is now a real force, isn't it, economically? And as a result, society has changed a little bit around it.
So what does that mean for then, if we sort of break it down? That's the big view, but if we go down to the level of somebody who is playing cricket in India, and they've gone past the stage of being having their talent identified early. Maybe they're going to be a late bloomer. What could somebody in that situation do? Because it's probably one of the most common questions we get on the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show is, how can I become a cricketer? I'm 20, I'm 23. What can I do? Is the door completely shut for the people in that situation?
I don't think it's completely shut. I think then circumstance comes into play quite significantly. So obviously, if you're a mid-20-year-old and you are that late bloomer that you talk about, David, then you've got to have a level of cricket around you that is identified. So, in England and Australia, you've got great cricket in Australia. If somebody's performing brilliantly at the age of 25 after being missed or not being at the standard required when they were 19 to make that step up into professional cricket, then the great cricket provides that platform for them in the same way as Premier League has done that here. And the lad, the seam bowler, who's just moved from Leicester to Notts Gurney, is a great example of that. He's a relatively mature cricketer that has bowled well in the leagues, had a bit of a career change, bowled well in the leagues, got picked up by Leicester, did really well in their 2020 campaign last year, and now is playing First Division cricket with Notts, who are obviously a very, very strong outfit. But if you haven't got that around you, if you're in India, if you're in Chennai, for example, then that circumstance is going to count against you if there isn't that club cricket and that recognised club cricket of being a level that the organisations that sit higher up will recognise as being valuable runs and valuable wickets, and you're probably going to miss out. I would say in somewhere like Mumbai, I've got a lot of experience in that, those systems are very much in place, and if somebody is performing in the top leagues over there, then the next stage up is to get into the Bombay side or the Maharashtra side, and then get identified through that route. So, circumstance does come into play in where you're located and what cricket is available to you.
I think that's paramount in pretty much every sport and every location around the world, isn't it? It's just using those stepping stones that you've got there, however integrated they are or however kind of higher level they are. You've got to maximise the situation you're in. And, if you're performing it under the constraints that are around you, well, they're the same for everyone else. So the people that are coming in there can only pick from what's there and from what's, or see or have knowledge of what's on their doorstep. So if you're excelling, then you can only do your best in those circumstances, I guess.
So it's a matter of learning to play the system, understanding the system, learning to get the most from it. And then, of course, more important than anything else, putting in the work that means that you get the runs and the wickets that prove that you can do.
Well, you've got somebody like Glenn McGrath. Glenn McGrath was playing out in the sticks, wasn't he? And was obviously doing well in his league out there, but then took the decision to go into Sydney and really chance his arm and go and play club cricket in Sydney, where he would be recognised by New South Wales if he performed well enough. And sometimes you do have to move. You look at Adam Gilchrist, who moved from New South Wales to Western Australia to get the opportunity to keep wicket in the stateside, and then look at the story that came off of the back of that as well. So sometimes you do have to move, and you have to create your own circumstances rather than expecting things to fall into place around you.
Yeah, funnily enough, we got a comment on the site this week actually that said, I can't remember exactly what it said, but it said, I really want to be a cricketer. I'm 22 years old. My number is, and he put his phone number down. And I replied saying, I don't think it's a matter of, putting your phone number on a website and hoping that the IPL are going to phone you. It's you've got to be realistic, and you've got to take action, and you've got to do what it takes. I think that's the key thing, isn't it? You've got to decide how much you really want to do it, or whether it's what the Japanese call mikabozu. Have you heard that phrase before?
I haven't. Go on.
It means 24-hour monk. It means you throw yourself into something with a huge amount of passion and commitment, and then at the first sign of any setback, you think, "Oh, I'll blow this, I'll do something else instead." And you see people like that a lot, don't you? You see people who have made a big psychological commitment, but then have such a fall when something goes wrong that they don't overcome it, and then they move on to something else. Their attention moves on to something else.
Coach, I can tell you I'm normally stood with 10 blokes with that mentality at about the 35
Well,
over mark every Saturday.
I
Now that's true.
was just about to say, that mentality is a norm, isn't it? That's not the exception, that's a norm. And the ones that break past that and find a way and make their own circumstance that works for them are the ones that give themselves the best chance of success. We had a net session this week where obviously the wickets were doing a bit because they've been undercover for the last 3 weeks. And it was interesting to see the ones who wanted to get involved, get stuck in, to struggle a little bit, but give themselves a chance. And they came out of it, they created their own circumstance and came out of the net far more positively, even though they probably got out three or four times, than the guys that thought, I sod this for a laugh, I'm just going to have a big slog, or I'm going to be very defensive in my body language because the ball's doing a lot. Every opportunity you can create your own circumstance and take that back into the Glenn McGraths and the Adam Gilchrists. If they'd have sat on their backsides in their own places, neither of them would have played Test cricket, and look what lives they've had as a result of cricket since.
Well, that's a good place to leave that conversation, and we'll move on into the yes no round every week. We have three questions. All we get to do is answer yes or no, which is as frustrating as it is interesting. Berners, you've got the three questions this week, so fire away.
First question, the talent system in India makes it hard for late bloomers.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question, batting collapses are caused by the batting team's mentality.
Yes.
Yes.
Question three, length is more important than line.
No.
Yes.
Time now to have a look in the mailbag and find out what questions we've got this week. And of course, the best question every week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you've got two interesting questions this week, and hopefully we can give a couple of interesting answers. What are they?
First question's in from Naveen, and this relates to 2020 cricket. And he's asking, what should the role be of the top order? Should they go after the bowling initially, even if it requires taking a few chances, or should they wait for the bowlers to bowl loose deliveries as you would in a normal game? So I think that comes down to kind of game plan mentality and strategy there.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting one. I watched a lot of 2020 cricket before I took over at Somerset, and I saw a lot of sides get to over three or four and be 3 wickets down, and as a result lose the game. Then, since I've done quite a lot of analysis on that sort of thing, and one of the key things to me is the use of that first over. And I always say to my team, if we're five for none off one, I'm quite happy. Because what can happen then is you can get feedback back from the two that are batting into the dugout about what the pitch is like. So really, that first over for me is an assessment over, which then can define the way that you play and your way that you adapt your maybe batting order or adapt your style going through the next 19 overs of the game. So that's something that we always look to do in the teams that I work with, is to make sure that at the end of the first over, we give ourselves the best chance of getting some information back so we can make some plans off of the back of that. Obviously, if you get a half volley or a full toss or a long hop, you can stick that away and you can be 8 or 9 or 10 off of the first over. But to me, it's more important to be none down and get some good communication back into the dugout. The second thing is that if you look at all of the IPL stuff, there's a significant spike in over three in terms of run rates. So you can see that sides probably do that a little bit just naturally anyway, in that they have a look for the first couple of overs, and then third over, there's quite a significant jump in run rate over the course of a 20 over game. So again, I think if you set yourself up, it's massively important. The last thing I would say as well is that if you can take wickets into the last 6 overs of a 2020 game If you can take as many wickets as possible into the last six overs of a 2020 game, then there's a great opportunity to kick on. And the stats are quite significant between, say, losing four wickets leading up into the last six or losing five. The team with four wickets down will score significantly more in the last six than a team that are five wickets down going into it. So, again, take that back into your first few overs. That gun-ho approach isn't necessarily always required. Because you can make it up if you've got wickets. You can got wickets in hand. But I like the idea of communicating back to the dugout so people know what the pitch is doing rather than having to face six or seven balls before they can make that assessment.
Looking at it from a more of a club level, I think that stuff is very interesting and absolutely correct. I would add that I think that a lot of the time it depends on what the situation is. In terms of who's playing, I mean, if you're playing an evening match and it's the under 13s and you think a good score might be 90 in your 20 overs, then you're not necessarily going to try and swing from the laces from ball one, even if that's your mentality, because you're going to get a number of bad balls anyway, club junior level anyway. So it's really a lot of the time, if you're a decent player, then you just wait for the bad ball and still roll along at a rate which will win you more matches than not. So, I mean, I don't think anyone would ever advise to start just slogging straight away. It's not a very well thought out tactic. But there are going to be players who are naturally more aggressive than others, and you might find the guy who can hit lots of fours and sixes would be good going in early if there's fielders up, if you've got a power play to think about. But also, you might get the guy who nudges and nettles it around can score an equally quick rate just by pushing it into a gap and scampering a two. You can still go along at a very decent lick, even in that situation. So I think it kind of depends on the level that you're playing at, and it also depends on the type of batsman that you've got. But if you've got batsmen who understand their game and understand what they're looking to do, then that's half of the battle rather than just swinging and hoping.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of sometimes as well in club cricket, there's a bit of scoreboard pressure, isn't there? Because I remember about 10, 15 years ago when I was playing, your bulk standard 120, 125 was a pretty, competitive score, and now you see people going out there again, people watching the IPL, watching it on telly, and they're getting these huge scores of 170, 190, even 200 plus. And so I think, people, as they do with brands and adverts and all the rest of it, they have in their head, well, hang on a minute, these boys go off the tee here at 10 and over, I need to be doing that as well, totally neglecting everything that you guys have just spoke about, having a little look, communicating, which doesn't help matters either.
Yeah, especially slower pitches as well. You've got to think if the ball's not coming on, it's not easy to hit through the line. If it's swinging around a bit like it does early season or doing a bit off the seam, you're not going to start smashing it around. It's going to be a little bit tricky, and you've got to think to yourself, as Gareth said, you've got to think to yourself what kind of a score can we get here. So yeah, it's about managing your resources, and it's about understanding what your job is. And it's not, I don't think it's quite as simple as saying, we're going either we set a platform or we attack from ball one. You can do both. You can be aggressive and set a platform if you're playing good percentage shots. So and equally, you can be bad at the other end. You can be you can do it poorly in that you can be too defensive or too aggressive and end up with too many wickets down or behind the rate, considering the type of conditions that you're playing in. So yeah, you've got to be able to assess, as you said, Gareth, you've got to be able to assess.
Next question's in from Siddhanth, and again about batting. He's an opening batsman. He had a very productive season last year where he scored over 800 runs. So firstly, well done on that effort, because that's a massive amount of runs in an amateur league season. And it was one of his goals, so he's setting his bar quite high. Since the season's finished, naturally, he's not played much cricket. and he just wants to know, moving into the new season, what he can kind of look to do to achieve those kind of levels again. And he's asking whether, you know, that kind of form is a psychological thing, or is it really something that he can develop himself? So he's asking for the top boy's advice.
I would say that form is absolutely a psychological thing. It's not something which is bestowed upon you. It's that comes and goes as it pleases. It's something that you can get yourself into and you can keep yourself in. And if you find yourself coming out of it, then you can get yourself back into it again. It's just a matter of how you approach it. I mean, somebody like Kevin Peterson, who we've talked about very often on the show because of his online coaching course on Pitch Vision Academy, he doesn't even really call it a slump. He just thinks to himself, "Well, you know, I got a low score this time. Next time I'll get the beginnings." And he doesn't even really think about it in terms of being out of form, being in form. He just thinks of even if he's got a string of low scores, he just needs to work a little bit harder, do a bit more practice, and keep going back to what he knows gets him runs. And there's no reason why anyone can't do that. If you've had any level of success at any level of cricket, just go back to what gets you results and then practice that as hard as you can. The other thing that I would say to do is to think while you're not playing very much, is to spend time thinking about the times when you were successful. So, you know, visualizing those successful innings, thinking how it felt, what you did, what worked for you, what didn't quite work for you, and keep it in your mind as often as you can. You know, you could do visualization as much as you want. If you've got 20 minutes to sit down and have a think about one of your best innings, think it through ball by ball if you like, and keep it high in your mind, keep success high in your mind, and that's going to help you with form. Now, it may be if you've had a long layoff, if you had your off season, you come back and, you know, first ball, you get an absolute snorter. There's nothing much you can do about that. But then you just go back to doing those basic things again, practicing, thinking about the good times, being well prepared, being fit. And you don't really even have to think of things in terms of form. You just think of things in terms of your preparation. Where are you coming from on this, Gareth?
Well, I mean, you've covered pretty much everything there, mate. So I echo echo your words on that. The crucial thing for me, you know, you've got 800 runs the previous season, is to work out why and what you did. And one of the exercises we do with a lot of players is to work out when you're playing at your best, when you've got your A game, what is around that A game? You know, what do you put around it? And as you say, that maybe, you know, I practice in a specific way, or I get my kit ready the night before, or whatever the case may be. But if you identify what those processes are that lead up to you performing at your very best, and then repeat them, you will not go too far wrong. And you will find you'll have an attitude towards slumps very similar to KP, as opposed to, you know, oh God, I'm out of form, I've got to try something different. The other thing that I would say is, once you've established those key points that give you the best chance of success, is then how can I get better still? And Colin Cowdery, always every winter, would try and develop a shot or a technique that would take him up the next level. So one time I had an opportunity to talk to him. He talked to me that in his early career, he had no sense of when to sweep or how to sweep. So for the whole of one winter, he developed, on top of the other aspects of his game that were already good, the ability to sweep the ball. Another winter, he looked at trying to hook the ball a little bit. Another winter, he looked to try and uppercut balls that were a bit shorter rather than hitting them flat to point. So it's great that you identify the things that you do well, but also then say, right, is there an area in this winter period when I'm not playing matches that I can actually improve my game even more? And as I always say, you know, the challenge is to become better and better and better. You never stop doing that. So I echo everything that you said, David, some really sound advice on that. Identify the key things that give you the best chance of success, the key processes that you put in to get yourself those 800 plus runs, and then see if there's a little area, a 2%er that you can add some extra value so those 800 runs turn into 900 next year.
There's something you said there that resonates with me about how your mindset is, how you frame form. And I think there's basically two ways that you can frame when you're in form. You can either think to yourself, "Great, I'm in form. This is what I expect life to be like when I'm playing cricket," or you think to yourself, "God, I wonder when this is going to end. I
Yeah.
better make the most of it before I run out." Even though both people are in form, the mindset is completely the opposite, because you're hoping that you're going to stay in form, whereas you're expecting that you're going to stay in form. And I think if you expect to stay in form, that's going to keep you in form for longer.
Yeah, well, Gucci always says when you're playing well, make sure you practice harder than if you were not playing well.
Yeah.
So, he used to spend more time in the nets when he was, say, that series against India where he scored, 900 runs back in, I think it was 1990. That year then, I should imagine his practice, number of balls that he was getting thrown by his old throw-down man, Alan Lilly, down at Essex must have been going through the roof, I would have thought. And I think, again, that's another bit of advice to add on to that. Obviously, you're in your off-season, but make sure you keep your numbers up, really, in terms of the
Practice
balls that you're hitting.
hard, fight easy.
Absolutely. I'd change fight to play, but I like that. That's a good saying, I think. Something that I try to drum in as much as possible. The other one that I quite like the idea of, and it was something that Peter Moores mentioned a lot when he was coaching the England cricket team, was play like number one, practice like number two.
Yeah. Good.
What about you, Bernard? What's your view on form, on your own form? How do you feel when you're out of it? How do you feel when you're in it?
Good question. I'll tell you what, it would be questionable whether I actually think about it at all. And that's me only being honest. I don't know, I just go out and I tend to just focus on what's in front of me, really, but having runs under your belt gives you an enormous sense of well-being that you've done it and that you can do it. So I often, I think about that. I think about what I've achieved and in the past, and play on the fact that I have done it. And there's no reason why I shouldn't be doing it as a standard procedure every time I play the game. But I've quite a basic thought pattern with my cricket these days, especially playing second 11 cricket, where I tend to take these kind of considerations as I'm marking my guard on a Saturday morning, which is not really ideal.
Well, I guess if you're going in with a clear mind, that's a good thing, isn't
Absolutely, it's
it?
better than a cluttered one, mate. That is for
Yeah.
sure.
No, I think yeah, and I mean it does. I think it does help. I mean, a lot of the boys on Saturday, oh, it's rained a lot. What's it doing and everything? Well, we just watched the other side bat for 50 overs, plod along to 170. Every single player got themselves out. The pitch was pretty much as flat and as hard as you'd find in London in the middle of the season. God knows how they did it, but it was. So, you just kind of got on with it. There was no, you didn't have to think about those, those kind of conditions. I just went out there and played as if it was a normal game of cricket. The guy ran in and bowled. When he bowled a bad ball and something a bit wide, I looked to try and utilize it and score. And when he bowled it on the stumps, I blocked it. And that's pretty much what I'll do all season, I think.
And it was a majestic 14 as well.
30, actually 30. Just got caught in the predicament of a hairline nick through to the keeper. Bowler kind of goes up, wicket kind of goes up. Umpire doesn't look interested and thought, don't be an unsporting sod, and just walked off. But it did take me 30 seconds to get to that conclusion. First game of the season, I was very, very reluctant, I must say.
Well, that's very honest of you. I know plenty of people who would have marked their guard again and got on with it.
I tell you what my decision making is on that. I'll throw this one out there on walking, is that I always play that decision based on the game. If I've played a game and they've given me a hell load of abuse and they've cheated throughout their innings, I'm not going nowhere. If I've played a game where they're a nice set of lads, you've gone through the motions, they've put a score on the board and guy's gone up and you've nicked it, I'm the first guy off of there. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know, but that's how I normally do it anyway.
Well, I subscribe to the Jeff boycott theory of I walk every single time as soon as the umpire raises his finger.
Good one. Okay, it's time for the soapbox at the end of the show here, and this week it's our beloved coach. Crack on, coach. 1 minute.
Well, I think an experience that I had this Saturday playing club cricket, as I normally do. We were in trouble. I was trying to bat out for the draw, and there was some chatter going on for the opposition. They were well on top, so you know, as you would expect, they were trying to win the game. And I came in on a hat-trick ball, which is always a fun thing to do. The guy who was bowling was a bit nippy. He played a couple of first-class games, so he was one of the quicker bowlers that I've faced at club level. He tore in, bowled a ball outside my off stump, which I left. Everybody oohed and aahed, and the slip said very loudly, "This guy hasn't got a clue. He left that online." And I said to him, "Well, how else am I going to leave it?" And that's my summary for this week. If you're going to sledge somebody, sledge them properly. Don't tell them that they're going to leave it online. So that's the end of the show for this week. Before we go, we've just got time to announce the winner of the competition. So we had a question from Naveen and one from Siddhant. So who's the winner this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Naveen. Again, two really, really good questions. It's something that I think teams should contemplate, is how they go about their first few overs and the role of a top order in 2020. But often that isn't really considered and not very clear, and as a result teams get themselves into problems. So I'm going to go with Naveen's question this week about 2020 cricket in the top order.
Yes, congratulations. And if you want to send in your own question to the show, you can do so, and you can win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So Berners, what's the ways that people can get in touch with us?
Give us a little call, and the number is 0208 8167 691, or they can email us at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, you can, and you can also get us through Twitter, PB Cricket Coach, through Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, so it downloads onto your computer when you go into iTunes. You can do that without any cost to you, and if you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy in iTunes, you can find us in there. And if you want to use anything else, if you want to subscribe on your phone or anything like that, then you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and all the details for how to do that are in there. Before we finish off, as is now our tradition, for those of you who listen right to the end, we've got the tail ender, the term of the week. Berners, what have we got for a tail ender?
It's an olden but golden one this week, and it's Horlicks. Has your club got a Horlicks? It's normally a player who likes to make a little bit of a mess of things, Horlicks being a hot drink that tends to put you to sleep, but each team has its Horlicks, and it's normally the guy flapping around on the boundary as he's trying to get the ball in and they've run six.
and that's, I've never heard that one. Is that doing a Horlicks or being a Horlicks?
You'd say that you're making a Horlicks.
You're making a Horlicks.
In making the drink, the Horlicks, and you've just basically, you're all over the shop. You are all over the shop. And Horlicks traditionally is that drink that you make just before you go to bed, which is normally what the guy's kind of doing, is he's falling asleep and making a complete fool of himself.
Well, I expect plenty of shouts of Horlicks going on this weekend if you're playing cricket. Thanks for listening. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, coach.